Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
To all of you Blood River Radio family, thank you for hanging on. Like I said, we've got two hours down in the record books now, in the archives, and we're getting ready to go third hour. We're picking up the one and only, the bitter ender, the still bitter, more bitter than ever, badass, head-cutting bitter ender. So we're picking him up right now. And his sister Nancy is going to be helping him, but they're going to be doing their thing, and I'm going to be just bringing them in and out of the break. So how you doing tonight, Bitter Ender?
Doing fine. Listen, I help Nancy. That's the way it's set up. She is an expert researcher and historian, and like I said before, this lady knows Confederate history in Kentucky, and she can tell you the shoe size of every one of the boys that served in the Kentucky regiments that never got to go back to Kentucky and fight up there. Yeah, the Orphan Brigade. So,
yeah, because
she
they were barefoot. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's it. Most of them had no shoes. You didn't have to worry about shoe size. Yeah, even in the wintertime. You talk about tough people. Good night.
They were tough as hell. I can't believe the things Sister Nancy has done. I mean, she says, "Yeah, I went down to Bermuda and found this press, and you know, I've been over to Europe putting up." She'd been into Europe. She'd been putting up memorials to people that, you know, some dead Confederates, people fought in the Confederacy. She'll go. Yeah, I went 400 or 500 miles, slept in my car in a Walmart parking lot. I mean, hell, no, you know, I mean, who's that guy? Who's that guy that went to Chicago?
But that's where you were picking up dates, right? In the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah. Yeah. She better than Leroy Brown, Gene. I'm telling you. I tell you what, Leroy Brown wouldn't fool with Miss Monica. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I told her when we.
Nancy, what are we going to start off with tonight?
Well, I was just going to make a statement. I had always knew that Jefferson Davis was inaugurated at Montgomery, Alabama, but because Washington's birthday is coming up next week, I was doing some research on things that happened in February with reference to the Confederacy, and this came as a bit of a surprise to me, and I'm sure you know about it. February the 22nd of 1862, even while the war was still going on, Jefferson Davis was officially inaugurated in Richmond, Virginia, on Washington's birthday. It was a chilly day followed with rain. So that, I thought, was something I really didn't twig on to. I mean, I always connected him with Montgomery, not so much with Virginia, being inaugurated at Richmond. But anyway, he was, and it was Washington's birthday, which is coming up next week.
Well, the reason they did that, and I think we may have covered this a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the Confederate Constitution, the way they had it set up, and you're right, he was first inaugurated in the Capitol portico there, or the porch there in Montgomery, and they've got a star there, and I stood right there where Jefferson Davis took the oath of office. That was highlighting my trip to Montgomery. But he was a provisional president. And the government was provisional for 1 year, and everybody's term of office ended after that 1 year. So if he hadn't done a very good job, or somebody else on the cabinet or in the government was just totally worthless, they wouldn't have to impeach him. Their term was going to end in a year anyway. So then you're right. Also, he was inaugurated in Richmond, and of course, when the Upper South states left the Yankee Empire when the great dictator called for an army to invade the South and force the South at gunpoint to rejoin the evil empire. Arkansas, Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, and then later on Missouri and Kentucky voted the Ordinance of Secession. So then they decided to move the capital up to Richmond, which is one of the larger cities in the New Confederacy then, with those six other states added. And so the government then was in Richmond. So when they set the permanent government and the first 6-year term for the president, then he was inaugurated again, as you said, on February 22nd, 1862. And the previous one had been in February of 1861 down in Montgomery. So, yeah, they actually had two inaugurations. So I guess the news nerds had a lot to cover back then. You know, they could run around and cover two inaugurations. And I'm sure all the TV stations in New York and Washington criticized everything they did, you know, picked it apart. So we know how that operates. But that was interesting. And if our listeners, and I'm sure most of them have probably seen the Great Seal of the Confederate States of America, and we were talking before we came on the air that you've actually seen that they used the press to make official documents.
What happened is I found the original press, which never left Bermuda. The actual seal, if it still exists, is supposed to be in the Museum of the Confederacy. That may be up for question. I really don't know. I can't answer that. But what happened is I was determined to see the press, and I was under the influence that the press was on display at the museum in Bermuda. And I already made plans to go right like at Thanksgiving for a couple of days to visit Bermuda. And what happened is when I called to the museum before I left here, they said, no, this is not the original. This is not the original press. But I didn't care. I was determined to find it because I knew that the press had never left Bermuda. And through my contacts that I made there, the lady who owns the press invited me not only to her home to take many photographs of the real press, which never left Bermuda, but she also fed me a meal.
Well, must have been Southern hospitality there in Bermuda. So
that's right.
But, go ahead. I'm sorry.
There was a lot of sympathy, and that was a blockade runner stop. From England, they would often stop there in Bermuda. And oddly enough, I think one end was like the Union forces and the other end was the Confederate forces. And it's a very small island. But at any rate, the blockade runners, as you know, would stop in Bermuda on their way to America.
Yes. And that was the thing. The blockade runners were loaded down with cotton, of course, to trade with the British for war materials and medicine and things that we needed. And they wouldn't go all the way to England. They'd meet the English captains and the people that were buying the cotton in either Bermuda, Nassau, or in Havana for the Gulf Coast ports. They would go to Havana and meet with the British. And they said when a blockade runner would pull into any one of those ports, you could look out on the horizon, and the horizon was just covered with British ships wanting to buy that cotton to take it back to the mills in England because they were running short, and the South couldn't supply as much as they were doing shipping to England prior to the war. They had to run it through the blockade, and sometimes it was successful and sometimes it wasn't. So the cotton price really went up then when it became very valuable. But, yeah, that's interesting about the press for the seal. And, of course, that was supposed to be used on official documents and actually never got back to the Confederacy because by the time it got to Bermuda, the blockades were so tight around the Confederacy, they were afraid it would get captured by the Yankees and be lost forever. But that's great that you actually got to search that out and find it. And for our listeners, I'm sure a lot of them have seen the seal of the Confederacy. It's a round seal as opposed to the one for the evil empire to the north that has the shield and the buzzard on it or whatever they have. Anyway, this is a round seal. In the middle, it had a representation of the George Washington statue, which is on the Capitol grounds in Richmond. And then they tied it in with George Washington again, that the date on the seal is 22 February 1862, which is the date that the first official government and the first term of the president, as you had mentioned, the inauguration of Jefferson Davis for his 6-year term, and that was the only term that he or any president of the Confederacy could serve. They set it up, you only have one shot at it, so you better get it right the first time. But they did give the president a six-year term. And then around the outside of it, there are different types of crops that were raised in the South, made into a wreath. Tobacco, of course, cotton, sugar cane, I think corn, and there was one or two other plants that were also in there. Since the South was an agricultural region, and that's what they made their money on, and that provided their life's necessities. And then down at the bottom, it had Deo Vindici, which means
God
vindicates.
Looks like we've got to go to that first break, Gene. People, hold on to your seats. We've got to go back to this first break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, every day I learn. We have the most incredible staff you've ever seen, but I think I know all about them. But every day I learn something new. They're just more bigger and more fabulous. Miss Nancy just told me and Gene something during the break. I never knew about her. Miss Nancy, please share that with our audience, our family, they need, our listening family, they need to know just what caliber of people we have on Blood River Radio. Go ahead, Miss Nancy. Tell the people what you just told me and Gene during the break.
I'll give you just a very simplified version of this. For 5 years, I was looking for the gravesite of Arrows von Bork. He was a Prussian volunteer who rode with Jeb Stuart. He was with Jeb Stuart when Jeb Stuart died. So he ended up, he was severely wounded, and he was written up by Mary Chestnut in one of the first books I read, The Diary of Dixie, because he had a serious throat wound. But he was sent to Europe at the end of the war. Before the war ended, Jefferson Davis sent him on a mission to England. And while he was in England, he actually wrote a book about his experiences. He wrote several books. But anyway, I decided I wanted to find his gravesite. And there's so many different steps to this. I knew a man who lived in Poland who was a Confederate sympathizer. And I tried to get him to find the town which was no longer Prussia, which was actually in Poland, to find the town where Arrows von Bork's family and he had lived, and he flew the Confederate flag most of the rest of his life on this property. And the Polish man said that there's been so many name changes, because what happened is Prussia no longer exists. It is now Poland. And of course, this was all new to me. It was an education in how Germany lost so much. Finally, to make a long story short, I won't go into all the details. There's a lot of effort to, it took a long time from to put all this together. I made a call out to my European contacts. Help me. Someone, please help me find the von Borks. Well, guess what? I found the von Borks, who yearly, or maybe every other year, they go in to see their former mansions, their former lands that have been now taken over by the Poles. And they were organizing a trip into Poland when I found out where von Borks' home was. They did not know it. There was, of course, they're not Confederate researchers. And the reason that they couldn't find out is because the road had passed by the building that was their mansion, that was von Borks' mansion, had been destroyed probably by the Soviets. And the only thing that was left was the a chapel in which von Borks' parents and himself were buried in. But those stones were still in that chapel. So there was no doubt that that was where he was buried. The stones were broken, but they were in the chapel. And to make a long story short, in 2006, with the help of the von Borg family, who was making a trip into their former homeland to make a tour or to look at the properties that they used to own, they included this wonderful memorial that we had to mark with a VA marker and a cross. And we had reenactors. We had the Polish people in that small town. They came out in mass. I gave them Confederate flags. There was a Confederate flag flying when we arrived.
God.
They had the fire department were participating in this with the Confederate flags. And after the event, which was really great, they also served us a meal and danced for us. And the reenactors who came from Germany, mainly Germany, they had a meal for us. So it was a big deal for me anyway. I think it was great. It was once in a lifetime. I learned a lot about the lands that the Germans lost.
It's amazing. You've actually been there. And this is the first place this Miss Nancy has been. I mean, It sounds like a movie, like some type of cross between of romance and an adventure novel, the stuff that Miss Nancy's done. That's the kind of people we have on this rodeo. Not me, of course, but I'm just amazed at that. And I just found that out just 10 minutes ago. But what do you think about that, Bitter Ender?
I think you're lying. You all are both lying about this, because I have sent you all an article I wrote called The Pole in Poland.
Yeah.
Go back and find it. That's all about this event that we had. And I flew out to Germany. That was actually that year I was there twice. I was unsure whether I was even going to go to this thing, but it was probably the best thing that I've ever done.
Golly, Moses.
But that really is great. They did it. Besides, the Confederate veterans claimed that they did it. But I still think I was the one doing the research for 5 years to try to find the gravesite. There were other people who were involved. It was not totally me, because there was actually the Czechoslovakian man who found the chapel buried behind these massive trees. And when we got there, somebody had opened up the pathway and taken these trees down and opened up a pathway for us to get to this chapel.
Wow.
So they were very excited about what we did, because they did not, the Germans and the Poles don't like each other, but this was totally out of their hands. This was Confederate history. So,
well, how much of the chapel that was there, how much, how high was this?
Oh, the chapel. The chapel had a tree. The chapel had a tree growing out of it. It was only tiny little chapel. It's very traditional for a chapel in the German way of thinking, to have a chapel next to their mansion or their property. And so this was a typical thing. But what was interesting is, without a doubt, the mother and father and arrows on Bork's grave were in there.
Well, how big was the chapel? Was the wall, were the walls still intact?
I mean, if it was 20 by 20, it would be, I'd say that was, it was very small. Oh, and the okay. roof was had a tree growing out of it. Now, they tell me that there's been efforts to repair that chapel and that they've had other memorials since the first one we had in 2006.
That's an amazing story.
That's fantastic. That's absolutely amazing. Good night. To go that far and into a foreign country and do the research to find his gravesite and the property that they had there when it was Prussia, that is just absolutely amazing, Nancy, that you could pull something off like that.
The reason I was able to get into Poland was through the Von Bork Association, who was already planning to take a bus tour into the property. Now, I didn't go into Poland on my own. I went with a bus tour of the Von Bork family, who were going back. They do this apparently every couple of years to see the properties they used to own. So it's kind of a sad story, really. But, you know, I've got a question for you, Gene. Doing my little bit of research on Joe Shelby, I found out something that I thought I did not know about. And we're going to talk about Joe Shelby and his connection to Eagle Pass. But guess who started the planning for this settlement that they created in Mexico? Do you know who it was? I did not know this. I had no idea about it.
I haven't heard that one either.
Commander Matthew Fontaine Maury.
Huh. From the Confederate Navy?
I did not know that until I read this on the internet, but that's, you know, unless they're giving out false information. I also have a book here called Fallen Guidon, that's probably not the right way to pronounce it, The Saga of Confederate General Joe Shelby's March to Mexico. But even in that book, I'm going to have to go, I read it twice, but this information about Commander Matthew Fontaine Maury creating this settlement in advance is all new to me.
No, I've never heard that before. But a lot of the Confederates had to move out of the South. Things were so bad, they'd lost their homes, their farms, everything. They were under persecution by the evil government for 12 years after the war. During Reconstruction, they had nothing left here, and the carpetbaggers and the vultures came down from the North to pick the bones clean of what was left of the South after the war, as horrible as the war was, and how much deliberate destruction the Yankee armies imposed on the civilian population in the South. Forget about the military. What they did to the civilian population was nothing but war crimes from Virginia all the way out to Texas. A lot of the Southerners had to leave, and that's where that community started in Brazil, Los Confederados, that the Brazilian government wanted to get cotton growing in Brazil, and they got almost about 800 people to leave the South and go to Brazil to start cotton farming. They were giving them the land, and since they had raised cotton in the South, they knew pretty much what they were doing when they set up farming down there, and they weren't under the oppression and the harassment and the murder of the Yankee occupation troops in the South during Reconstruction. So that happened.
I always thought that there was not everybody stayed, but I have a note that 10,000 Southerners went to Brazil, and I did not. I know about that because I've done a lot of research on that, but I did not know a lot of them went to British Honduras, because we're going to talk about is Mexico.
Well, Susan, I see you talk about that as soon as we come back from this break, sister. People are coming back to this exciting history lesson. I mean, it's a history lesson mixed with an adventure trip. Be right back, folks.
Yeah. proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Corey Myers. In his New York State civil fraud trial, former President Trump has been ordered to pay more than $350 million. USA's John Schaefer has details.
He's also facing a 3-year ban on conducting business in New York State. The judge also fined his sons and imposed a 2-year business ban on them in New York. Allegations against Trump include artificially inflating his net worth to secure better loan terms. Trump contends that the case is politically driven and argues that since the banks profited, there's no victim. His legal team says they will appeal.
A former FBI informant facing charges for allegedly lying about President Biden's involvement in his son Hunter's foreign business dealings. President Biden confirming the ex-informant's falsehoods and urged the House Republicans to drop their impeachment inquiry. Alexander Smirnov falsely claiming that executives of Ukrainian energy firm Burisma admitted to hiring Hunter Biden to access then-Vice President Biden. The indictment is a setback for House Republicans, who have used Smirnov's allegations in their push to impeach the president. Egypt is reportedly building a refugee camp near the Gaza border in anticipation of potential conflicts if Israel attacks the southern city of Rafah. Despite Egypt's denial of preparing for refugees in the Sinai Peninsula, sources indicate to Reuters that an area is being readied near Gaza with basic facilities to shelter Palestinians if they flee across the border. The upcoming crewed rocket launch from Florida's Space Coast is scheduled for next month. NASA announcing that 3 astronauts and a cosmonaut will embark on their journey to the ISS aboard a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket on March 1st. This is USA News.
Omaha Steaks is rewriting the book on burgers with an all-new handmade texture for the juiciest home-style burgers you've ever tasted. Their pure-ground burgers are made from single cuts of real, aged Omaha steaks. These are truly steaks on a bun. Filet mignon, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, and even brisket burgers. Now is the time to experience the exclusive Burger Perfection Flight for just $79.99. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code TREAT at checkout to get an extra $20 off your order plus free shipping. You'll get 4 of each pure ground burger so you can sample all the steak on a bun greatness. These burgers are crafted for a juicier, more tender experience, making your mouth water with every single bite. Don't wait. Go to omahasteaks.com. Use promo code TREAT at checkout and get $20 off the Burger Perfection Flight and discover your new burger obsession. Minimum order may be required.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Well, do Blood River Radio family. I tell you what, I hope you people are enjoying this talk and this history lesson, this adventure as much as I am. So without further ado, the bitter ender himself said, we're going to go back and talk about Shelby Park and the crossing where the Confederates. Go ahead, bitter ender.
No, we were going to do this last week, and we got off on some other subjects, but we wanted to bring up a Confederate, Joe Shelby, and was born in, now Nancy can give you a lot more details than I can, but he was born in Lexington, Kentucky, December 12th, 1830, attended Transylvania University. And as a kid, I always thought that was a funny name for a school, that Dracula was head of the school. But anyway, that was before the Dracula movie came out. I'm pretty sure they picked that name. And then he moved, Shelby moved out to Waverly, Missouri, made a lot of money. I think he, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nancy, and he and his stepfather were in the hemp business, growing hemp and making rope.
Stepbrother.
And made a lot of money making rope. And when the war came along, he was actually offered a commission in the Yankee Army in Missouri and turned it down, and then went out and organized his own cavalry command and paid for the equipment, saddles, bridles, rifles, shotguns, pistols, sabers, whatever they needed, very much like, and he's been compared to, Nathan Bedford Forrest in Tennessee, because Forrest raised his first command with his money and traveled to Louisville and purchased equipment and then got it out of there, past the Yankee patrols around Louisville, and brought it back down to Tennessee and armed his command at his expense. So they've often compared the two, Shelby and Forrest, and neither one of them had any military education prior to the war. Neither one of them attended West Point or the Citadel or VMI or any of those schools. They were just both brilliant natural warriors, and they knew how to take care of their men, made sure they took care of their horses, and fought by instinct more than anything else. Now, of course, they learned as the war went on, they picked up the finer points of how to command a different size units. And a lot of times I've read historical accounts about Shelby, and they said, the historian said he was the Nathan Bedford Forrest of the West, because he was such a tough fighter, and his command was got to the point that they were really feared by the federal soldiers in Missouri and Arkansas. And he fought in most of the major battles that were there in Arkansas and Missouri, and was very successful. Fought at Carthage, Wilson's Creek, Elkhorn Tavern, Prairie Grove, and he was with Sterling Price on that long raid that he made up through Missouri. And from what I've read about Shelby, he never lost a battle where he was in complete command of the field. Now, just like Forrest, when Forrest was at Fort Donelson or Shiloh or some of the other battles that were commanded by somebody else, the overall Confederate effort failed. But when Forrest had his command, all the troops on the field were under his command, he very seldom lost until the very end of the war. And his troops were pretty much worn out by the time they got down to Selma, Alabama. And I think the same thing was true of Joe Shelby, that as long as all the troops were under his command, he didn't lose. He was promoted to Brigadier General in the spring of 1864 and then received the rank of Major General in May of 1865. So it was really something how great he was, and a lot of people really haven't heard about him and what an outstanding cavalry commander he was. And his troops were referred to as the Iron Brigade because they were so tough. And at the end of the war, he refused to surrender. He was out in Texas by that time, and he heard about what had happened back east, and he refused to surrender. And this is what I thought was really interesting. We're bringing it up sort of to current events. He crossed the Rio Grande at Eagle Pass, and that's down south, kind of the southwest of San Antonio, and crossed the river. They wrapped their flag up in rocks and sank it in the river, and then he threw his sword off into the river. He was not going to surrender his sword to the Federal Army. And they moved across the river and into Mexico. And Nancy had talked about how a lot of the Confederates had left the South after the war and tried to find either homes or employment in Mexico or Brazil. And a lot of them had to flee the South and get away from the Yankee persecution and head to Europe. So he was down there. And the thing about it is we've heard about that in the news, that Eagle Pass and how many of the illegals are coming the other way across the river and into the United States. And that park that Governor Abbott just said is a Texas state park, and we're closing that down. Since that's owned by Texas and it's on the Texas side of the river, we're closing that park down. It's named Shelby Park. And it was named after Joe Shelby, who that's the point where he crossed the river from Texas into Mexico. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And I hear the people, the news reporters, and they talk about their Shelby Park at Eagle Pass, but they never say who it was named for. And I guess in a way it's good that they don't. If it had any ties to the Confederacy, all the protesters would be down there whining and crying, the usual suspects of losers and ne'er-do-wells, to take away another part of Confederate history and turn it into St. George Floyd Park or something like that, or another. We'd have to look at another MLK sign on something. So, but anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting. It goes from the 1865 up to 2024, and the same part of a historical part of that Rio Grande River right there at Eagle Pass. So I'm sorry, Nancy, did you have anything else you wanted to fill in on Joe Shelby, since he's a fellow Kentuckian?
Yeah, I've got some notes here. I've just got Joseph Orville Shelby, along with some of his men, maybe 100, of the Iron Brigade crossed Texas. And there's a map of how they went across Texas, I think through Marshall, Texas, down to El Paso, down through hoping to get into Mexico. And I also read that the feds were trying to block them at Eagle Pass, but they were able to cross the Rio, and they buried the Confederate flag in the Rio there at the, not maybe not at Shelby Park, but certainly close to it at Eagle Pass. I read the Fallen Guidon, that may not be the right pronunciation. It's called The Saga of Confederate General Joe Shelby, His March into Mexico by Edwin Adams Davis, if anybody is interested in reading more about Joe Shelby. And the Civil War was brewing between French-held Mexico City, which was the President Maximilian, and there were revolutionaries under Benito Juarez going on at the time that Confederates moved into Mexico, and they had sided with Maximilian, and they settled near Cordoba, Veracruz. Their settlement was called Carlotta, and apparently about 500 white settlers. It ended, unfortunately, when the government of Maximilian collapsed in March of 1867. But several governors of various states and generals, such as Edmund Kirby Smith, John B. Magruder, and Sterling Price, all removed to Mexico and tried to settle in Mexico. And what I thought was quite unusual, I didn't realize this, that the main idea for this migration and settlement had come from Commander Matthew Fontaine Maury, which I really didn't realize, and I think his plans preceded maybe even preceded the war. I am not sure. I have to look into that. That's news to me. But and I wanted to mention something I attended in June, on June the 27th of 2009. There was a dedication of the first ever statue to General Shelby. Now, Shelby does not have a statue in Kentucky. This statue is in the little town of Waverly, Missouri, where he lived and had a farm and a rope factory and a hemp factory, got married there. He was engaged in the border war before the war actually started. Yankees burned down the Shelby home during the war. What was interesting, I did attend this event in 2009, and of course, my governor at that time, Steve Beshear, and even Nixon, who was the governor of Missouri, was invited to attend. Neither one of them showed up, so I wrote an article called Two PC Politicians Peter Out. But I really have to commend these people in Waverly. They purchased...
Sister Nancy, we have to hold that thought because we have to go to our last break, Sister Nancy. So don't lose your place. Be right back, folks.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I was just telling our two family members, staff, whatever you call them, I feel like we're joined at the hip. I know we're joined at the soul. But I was just telling them, I wish I could have started in the beginning and made it like a CD or something out of every single a history lesson that Nancy and Jean have done in some kind of way. Have somebody who's good with a computer to put them in some kind of in chronological order, organizing in chapters and make a textbook. Because I'm telling you flat out, people, there's no place on earth. There's never been a textbook or a series of textbooks, an encyclopedia of textbooks of history, not just Confederate history, but World War II history. They could compare with the knowledge that you're hearing from these two precious people. I kid you not. I wish I could do that. It's not too late. Who knows? That's just a It'd be great if we could, because this knowledge, I'm afraid that when they die, that a lot of them will be gone, you know, because I know, you know, the poisons, the eternal poisons of the will, hate our guts, and they hate this knowledge. They do not want it to get out. Anyway, I'm going to shut up, and I don't know who to go back to, but God bless you, Julie.
When we're dying, I feel like I'm in a Monty Python skit. Well, I'm not dead yet. Well, he soon will be. He's very old. Well, he says he's not dead. I can't take him. It's against regulations. So, anyway. But, you know, the thing is, though, Eddie, people can go to the archives and go to the Blood River Radio website.
That's
and,
true.
And it's all the pros, all the programs are listed by dates, and each hour is on there. If they want to listen to some of the things that we've had on the third hour, the Confederate hour. And you're right, though. It would be nice if you get them all together. There are two books that I really recommend to people that come to the Forest Home on tours, and they want to ask about the South, and I tell them things that happened, and they go, well, we never heard that. I say, well, there are two books you could get that will really refute the Yankee myth of history and the lies they've told about the South and the way they've beaten us down for, I don't know, more than 160 years. Number one is Southern by the Grace of God by Mike Grissom, and it's got a lot about the South and biographies of Lee and Forrest and Jackson and Sam Davison in there. So you can really learn about some of our Southern heroes, just a one or two page biography, and what really happened and what was really said back then. And the other one is The South Was Right by Donnie and Ronnie Kennedy. And I think if you had those two books in your library, you could go on a debate with any South-hating Yankee or politically correct goofball today and just shred them. I mean, tear them to pieces, because you would have the facts, and they can't stand up to the facts. They can whine and complain about, oh, it's racism, oh, it makes people feel bad, oh, it was this, it was that, it was that, well, you know, but they don't have much to stand on once you hit back at them with factual information. And that's their crutch is, you know, bad feelings and, you know, how oppressed these people are, all this. Well, you know, that's, you know, their racket or whatever you want to call it. And, of course, we had an expression in the Marine Corps, if you can't hack it, get a racket. And this is their racket. So that's all they had to stand on. So, the information is out there. You just have to dig for it. And not many people are going to do as much research as what Nancy's done and travel to Europe and all of these places, to Bermuda and so forth, to find all these Confederate historic sites. And she is certainly to be commended for that. But not many of us have the time or the financial ability to do that much traveling. But it's great that she can, and then give us this information and find out how the Confederacy was literally spread all over the world. In our attempt to gain our independence.
Liverpool has a lot of information about our Confederacy. But, you know, I want to brag about a couple of men that were in Waverly, Missouri. And it has to do with our Confederate General Joe Shelby. This Confederate resident who was a Waverly, when I say the former Confederate resident, that's General Joe Shelby. Whose Waverly citizens wanted so badly to honor. The states of Kentucky and Missouri had both failed to raise a statue to their brave son and heroic figure. The Shelby marker, which rests in Forest Hill Cemetery, is rather insignificant. I've been there, considering the accomplishments of this brave leader of men. I want to brag about these two men, W.L. Poynter and Keith Dalen of Waverly, took out a loan in order to purchase 2,000 copies of the book entitled Shelby and His Men. These books were sold to help raise the necessary funds for a Shelby statue. It took 26 years of fundraising, but they did it. Many people worked on this project over the long years of fundraising. You're talking about a very small town. Waverly, I would be surprised if there's 800 people in Waverly. These men worked for 26 years to get this statue put up. I was present for the unveiling. The unfortunate thing is It was a poorly done statue. I hate to say that, but it was. But it's been done, and Joe Shelby has a statue in the little town where he spent many years of his life. And no, I'm not wealthy. I've always worked, and nobody paid my way to go to Europe. I did all that on my own money.
Well, I hope the Shelby statue is still there, and
yes.
Counterculture and the communists that have taken over our country haven't had it destroyed or moved off and stuck in a museum somewhere.
I'm going to look into that. But see, I doubt that anything would happen when you consider this is such a small. The population was 807 people, and they spent 26 years fundraising to get this statue up. And it's probably an all-white town. I've been, like I say, I was there when they unveiled it in 2009. And it's, I'll have to check on the internet, but I have a feeling it's probably still there. But I have to commend these people in the small town actually do that. But unfortunately, they made this statue is not, the horse is lousy, the statue is not good, but it was done. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I guess we've got a special deal on the horse.
anyway. they didn't have Moses Ezekiel to do the sculpturing for them. So.
No, they did not. I think some Yankee outfit did it.
Yeah, well, that's where your problem is right there. So, anyway.
Didn't take you long to have an answer for that, Gene.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But, you know, at least they got the statue up. And there are so many places today that are destroying our history. And
absolutely.
Are they going to look at us, you know, well, the United States is not going to be here 1,000 years from now. But whatever historians are left and go back and say, you know, I don't know if the United States is going to be here 10 years from now the way it's going. And go back and look at them and say, you know, they had all these historical monuments and they destroyed them. And just like when in Iraq or some of these places where the Taliban comes in and destroys us, or the Cultural Revolution of Chairman Mao Communist China and how many things they destroyed over there. And it doesn't really matter if you agree with what happened 1,000 years ago or not. That's history. Those are artifacts. Those are things that cannot be replaced.
Look at what we did to Germany and their beautiful statues and their artwork and their books.
Yeah.
We destroyed everything in Germany, and now it's coming back to bite us.
Yeah.
Yes.
And look what the terrorists did now. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And look what the terrorists did to Notre Dame Cathedral. I wonder if it's ever going to be repaired.
Yeah. Yeah, they're talking about, they had a thing on a couple of weeks ago that they've gotten most of that repaired, but who knows? Paris has been turned over to the Muslims. They've gone in there and taken over, and there are certain areas of Paris that even the police won't go into that part of town. So there's a whole flood coming across the Mediterranean into Europe, and it's really taking over that parts of Europe. And I read an article online about that, a conservative writer talking about the Western European culture, the white, the Celtic, the Anglo, the native French culture, the Belgians, the Swedes, their culture and their country is just being destroyed by the immigrants. And he was kind of pointing the finger at all of these Muslims out of North Africa that are coming into Europe and to Italy and so forth. But whose fault is that? The politicians are allowing that. You know, the first Muslim invasion of Europe was in the 600s and 700s when Muhammad brought them out of the Arabian Peninsula, and they swept through Turkey and all across Egypt and Syria and across the North Africa and into Europe and up through the Iberian Peninsula. But that was an armed invasion. And now our own people are allowing it.
Yes, through our own criminal cabal that we call the government. Well, people, that's about it. But we're running completely out of time. That's another 3 hours of Blood River Radio in the books. And I certainly hope you people out there enjoyed it. And I really, really bless you, Blood River Radio family. It's been staying with us and keeping us on the air. And I'd like to thank you, Miss Nancy, and thank you, Bitter Ender, and Lizzie, and Monica, and our guest, Herta. Thank you, Sears people. God willing, we'll be back same time, same place next week. It'll be the 24th, the last Saturday of February. But good night, everybody.